from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it took a couple years, but we in California have regained the crown as the state most likely to hit the headlines in odd and interesting and, in some cases, totally fallacious ways. Very proud to announce that we've got the crown back, because Florida was, man, Florida had a whole year of it. Then, I don't know where the crown was last year, but certainly Florida won it in 2000. We got it back, starting with the story that didn't happen a couple weeks ago. I waited a while to make sure that I could have said this the day the story, non-story, broke, when the Inglewood policeman, who was captured on tape, slamming a suspect's head, a handcuffed suspect's head, face down, onto the hood of the police car, and punching him in the face. When that police officer was found not guilty by an Inglewood jury a couple weeks ago, all the media went on riot watch in Los Angeles. And had a lot of folks on the air talking about the danger of a riot, and we gotta keep calm, we gotta keep cool, can't be a riot. For those of you who missed the Le Show broadcast back when the last Los Angeles uprising, civil unrest, took place, it happened for one reason and one reason only. It happened, of course, in the wake of the Rodney King verdict, which was why the media, reasoning by analogy, without facts at their disposal, went on the riot watch. But the difference was, in the wake of the Rodney King verdict, there was a small disturbance at the corner of Florence and Normandy in South Central Los Angeles, and it was on live TV. The choppers flew in to cover it. And for still, we don't really know what reason. We know that the police chief was unreachable by phone. He was at a fundraiser in Bel Air. For hours, unreachable. Still, doesn't totally explain why there was no police response to the unrest at the corner of Florence and Normandy. It was on live TV. Ladies and gentlemen, I said then, I'll say again, you advertise on live TV there's not going to be police response to some civic unrest, you're going to get more civic unrest. Did that happen this time? No. So there was no riot. End of story. And then, of course, there's the California recall election, recall of the governor election, which has made all the news. We have a special guest on the newsmaker line. I don't know from exactly where in California, somewhere up the coast. Hi, you're on the
hello Harry.
Yes.
It's
yes.
Arnold.
Yes. Hello,
great to be with you.
Great to have you on.
I want to take this opportunity
yes.
to announce to your audience that I'm running for governor of California.
All right.
Hello?
Yeah. Hi.
Frankly, I was expecting a bigger reaction. I've had bigger response.
You didn't, I know, this is what, the 17th show you've been on to announce? I mean, it's not really a big surprise anymore.
No.
No,
it's just
that what you were.
Your public radio.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you. Well, anyway.
All right, just read
hello,
that.
Welcome to the show.
Charlie, you're not my Charlie anymore. You're screwing it up. You're killing your soul with an audience looking on. If I hadn't left early last night, I would have made a speech to you. You're not the only one you're going to hurt. If you don't believe me, I don't believe in you. If you don't believe me, I don't believe in you. It makes it all feel better, does it? drafted and you spent accordingly. You can't afford it now. You can't afford it now. You can't afford it now. You try and you fail. Loving like a little doll. And feed it on the scraps you find. Kissing while you're still asleep. Where's the problem? You can ask if you keep your head up. But the road is long and you're falling asleep at the wheel. It's a global crazy about you and I'm not far behind. Can you care about your friends and them all? If you don't believe me, I don't believe in you. If you don't believe me, don't believe in you. You loved it and you spent accordingly. Still asleep. You buy now and you pay later. You buy now and you pay later. About you. This girl going crazy about you, and I'm not far, not far behind.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. No riot, no riot yet. We've just looked out the window, still no riot. Ladies and gentlemen, keeping an eye on the world's most trusted news source, because I've given so much attention to the Faux News Channel, time to check in with CNN, which now advertises itself as the world's most trusted news source. I can't do James Earl Jones, but you know. So, this week, I was watching CNN, and I heard anchor Frederica Whitfield describe something. I think it was, I was so transfixed by the phrase, I forgot what the story was, which is, of course, the point, at least my point. I don't think it was hers. She was using the, she used the phrase, that would be just about everything under the gamut. Everything under the gamut, ladies and gentlemen, because they're the most trusted. But more trustworthy yet, the Los Angeles Lakers said Thursday the team is considering traveling with two public relations representatives on road trips to field questions about the Kobe Bryant case. Team spokesman John Black indicated a second spokesman might be necessary to deal with non-sports reporters who may want to focus on a legal aspect of the case. The team's unease may have been highlighted Thursday when a CNN reporter working on the Bryant case phoned the Lakers' publicity office and asked to speak to legendary Lakers announcer Chick Hearn. Hearn was not available for comment, having died a year ago. The most trusted name in news. And, ladies and gentlemen, also in news of the media, The 60 Minutes Clinton Dole or Dole Clinton segments, which began airing in March, are no more. CBS News has officially pulled the plug on the mini debate segments featuring former President Bill Clinton and former Senator Bob Dole. CBS News spokesperson said the network will explore other ways to showcase their differences, like off the air and in another city. Their segments were pre-taped with each man, with neither man appearing together. That was widely believed to be the problem. Not enough sparks flew, ladies and gentlemen. You need sparks flying. You need, as Mark Cuban said this week in his widely derided comments about the Kobe Bryant case being good for the NBA, you need train wreck TV. About which more momentarily, ladies and gentlemen. Officials at Walter Reed Army Medical Center are referring some outpatients to nearby hotels because casualties from operations in Afghanistan and Iraq have overloaded the hospital's convalescent facility. This from the Washington Times, a conservative newspaper. The Army Hospital and its convalescence facility are at maximum occupancy capacity since Operation Enduring Freedom began in Afghanistan in 2001. The hospital's 3,900 staffers have put in a substantial amount of overtime. How many casualties are there? You tell me, department, ladies and gentlemen. A broadcaster who became known as the voice of Free Iraq after the fall of Saddam Hussein has walked out of his job, saying the United States is losing the propaganda war. Failure to invest in the new Iraqi broadcasting service means foreign channels are gaining popularity at the expense of the U.S., according to Ahmed al-Rikabi, the American-appointed director of TV and radio. The people of Iraq are not about to turn against their liberators, but they're being incited to do so. These foreign channels contribute to tension within Iraq. Stephen Claypole, public affairs advisor to the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq, said, "It's very typical of everything the Americans get involved in. They announce large budgets, and the money is never released." The best-paid journalist got a salary of $120 a month, compared with the minimum of $500 a month paid by other Arab networks. There was also a clothing allowance for newsreaders, but only to clothe the visible top half of their bodies. Some would say, how American? Some would say, how TV? The man accused by Britain of trying to buy uranium in Africa for Saddam Hussein's nuclear program has denied the allegation, saying he's the victim of a forgery. The man who made the trip to Niger, whichever way you want to say it, Wissam al-Zahawi, Iraq's former ambassador to the Vatican, told a liberal British newspaper, "My only mission was to meet the president and invite him to visit Iraq. The invitation and the situation in Iraq resulting from the genocidal UN sanctions were all we talked about. I had no other instructions and certainly none concerning the purchase of uranium." The Brits say they will release new evidence soon, according to The Economist. The Guardian says U.S. military casualties from the occupation of Iraq have been more than twice the number most Americans have been led to believe because of an extraordinarily high number of accidents, suicides, and other non-combat deaths. Oh, and the Defense Intelligence Agency reported over the weekend that those two trailers that President Bush said when he was in Poland were proof that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. The United States' Defense Intelligence Agency reported over the weekend, despite the derision heaped on this explanation when it was first proffered, the role of those trailers was to make hydrogen for balloons. Not party balloons, those would be helium, but, you know, military balloons. Hydrogen for balloons, ladies and gentlemen, let's go get them. Mission accomplished. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Oh my God, look at this pile. I'm talking about the apologies. Jeremy Sharkey apologized this week for his comments about Dallas Cowboys coach Bill Parcells, but the outspoken Giants tight end insisted his words were in jest. Well, here's the first warning sign. Just don't be funny. And taken out of context, quote, "I apologize for everything I said that offended people," Sharkey said. at a training camp. I really, at the time, it was a laughing matter for me, and I was just having fun with it. All the stuff I say is just how I am. It was fun and games. Shockey is quoted as calling Parcells a, quote, homo in an upcoming story in New York Magazine. He also criticized the former Giants coach for retiring a couple of times, then returning to coaching. That's funny, homo. France's foreign minister has apologized to Brazil over a botched mission to the Amazon to bring home a French hostage. Last month, Dominique de Villepin secretly ordered a military transport plane to the Brazilian Amazon after receiving a tip that a friend, the Franco-Colombian Green politician Ingrid Betancourt, held for 17 months by Colombian rebels, would be freed. The mission ended in fiasco, and the rebel Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, FARC, denied and intended to free her. Brazil and Colombia protested that they were not informed of the operation. Tension between France and Brazil rose when Samuel Pinheiro Guimarães, the Brazilian deputy foreign minister, said Monsieur de Villepin had given information which proved false. Ooh, wouldn't want to do that. Might start a war. One deputy demanded the expulsion of French diplomats, saying they would do better not to treat us like one of their African colonies. In a written statement, Monsieur de Villepin offered his apology to his Brazilian counterpart, who accepted. Monsieur de Villepin regrets not having been able to, as he would have liked, inform MRM sooner, as well as the embarrassment that this may have caused for Brazilian authorities. Read the statement. Vincent S. Schamel Jr., he's on the St. Louis School Board. His colleagues passed a resolution that censures him for offensive and inflammatory comments that caused an uproar in the community. Schamel, a former St. Louis mayor, acknowledged that he made a difficult situation worse by comparing protesters at St. Louis School Board meetings to Nazis and suggesting that police power should be used to control them. He made the comments July 16th. He has since apologized. If you are under 18, you must hang up now, isn't the greeting you'd expect from Verizon Communications' toll-free customer service line. Yet that warning of X-rated conversation is what some customers heard when they dialed a number listed on a recent letter from Verizon informing them of steep increases for some of the company's long-distance rates, scheduled to go into effect September 1st. Verizon's customer service line starts with the prefix 800. Thanks to a typographical error, the number listed on the letter started with the digits 888. 888, that turned out to be the phone number for Intimate Connections, an adult line hosted by Pilgrim Telephone Company of Cambridge, Massachusetts. Verizon will send apology notices to all recipients of the letter post-haste, according to a Verizon spokesperson. More serious stuff. The official spokesman of the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Tom Kelly, apologized unreservedly for using the phrase Walter Mitty in connection with the late government weapons expert David Kelly, who supposedly killed himself after being outed and forced to testify before a parliamentary committee about his supposed leaks to the BBC regarding the insubstantiality of British intelligence used to buttress their case for war. Blair, on holiday in the Caribbean, has faced calls to sack, that is to say, fire his press spokesman from one of his own parliamentary members, Glenda Jackson. Hey, Glenda. How you doing, babe? In a statement, Mr. Kelly denied trying to discredit the former weapons inspector, but admitted the briefing was a, quote, mistake, he said in a statement. We have sought to keep briefing to a minimum in accordance with the Prime Minister's wishes. I deeply regret, therefore, that what I thought was a private conversation with a journalist last week has led to further public controversy, or controversy, as they say in the United Kingdom. That was not my intention, nor most emphatically was I signaling a government strategy aimed at discrediting Dr. Kelly, as I have explained to the Deputy Prime Minister. What I was trying to do, at the request of several journalists, was to outline questions facing all the parties that the inquiry would have to address, as the inquiry into the supposed intelligence that underlay the dossier issued last September saying that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction and was 45 minutes away from deploying them. It was in that context, Kelly's statement went on, that the phrase Walter Mitty was used, but it was meant as one of several questions facing all parties, not as a definitive statement of my view or that of the government. We were discussing questions, not answers. I now recognize that even that limited form of communication was a mistake given the current climate. I therefore unreservedly apologize to Dr. Kelly's widow and her family for having intruded on their grief. There was no apology from Tony Blair's office for attempting to deny the quote originated from there. The investigation starts this week. Microsoft has apologized to a British man it had accused of sending out huge amounts of junk email or spam. The software giant issued an unreserved apology to Simon Granger from Merseyside, Liverpool, United Kingdom, whom it had served with a writ accusing him of stealing email addresses of its customers to send them spam. Granger was one of 15 people targeted by the company in a high-profile attack against the rising tide of junk email. Microsoft, 2 months later, has now admitted it was a case of mistaken identity. In a statement to the BBC in June, Microsoft said it had taken legal action against the background of misuse of a domain name registered to Mr. Granger's name. Granger said the company had made no attempt to contact him before serving him with the writ by mail. That's just me going through more apologies, because there are a lot this week. Jennifer Duffy, a contented suburbanite who's lived her entire 33 years in the bucolic small towns of Chester County, Pennsylvania, has never had much use for Philadelphia. So imagine her surprise when she received a letter at her home last month from the City of Philadelphia Parking Violations Branch, informing her that she owed the city $63 in fines and late penalties for failing to pay a parking ticket written for her car May 27th. The ticket, written by a city police officer, stated that she'd parked a fire, blocked a fire hydrant with her Ford at 2:30 p.m. Problem: Duffy was at her job that day, and her car was with her, and she doesn't drive a Ford. She drives a Toyota Camry. She immediately ran outside to check that no one had stolen her license tag. No one had. Obviously, there had been a mistake. She dialed the number on the violation notice. Boy, was I naive. She said the woman who answered did not want to hear excuses. She curtly told Duffy, pay up or schedule a hearing. But I wasn't there, Duffy said, she told the woman. I shouldn't have to take the day off work, drive an hour, and pay to park just to tell you I was never there in the first place. The woman wouldn't budge. Says Joseph Egan, the parking authority's executive director, we sincerely apologize. There's absolutely no need to handle people in that fashion. Doesn't say what fashion he wants to handle people in. The bishops of Sydney, Australia, have issued a public apology for, speaking of handling people, for circulating erroneous information about the personal life of the besieged Episcopalian bishop-elect, Canon Gene Robinson. In a statement released in June, criticizing Robinson's impending appointment, the Anglican Archbishop of Sydney, Peter Jensen, and his five assistant bishops accused the American priest of abandoning his wife and two children to pursue a homosexual relationship. But this week, Dr. Jensen admitted he now accepted that the split between Robinson and his wife had been amicable and had taken place 2 years before he met his new partner. Dr. Jensen said he could not recall where he'd obtained the misinformation. The comments had been made in good faith, he said, and reflected the wider misunderstanding of the situation that was carried in the media, both in Australia and overseas. Dr. Jensen said a written apology had been forwarded to Dr. Robinson. Don't try going topless at a water park in Detroit, even if you're only 3 years old. Katrina Sorrell and her daughter Suhaila Smith learned the hard way Wednesday when security guards at Wayne County's Chandler Park Family Aquatic Park called police on Sorrell because she allowed her daughter to play in the pool topless. Suhaila had her bikini bottom on, but her mother had forgotten the matching top. If I had the top, I would have put it on her, Sorrell said. But Sorrell saw nothing wrong in her daughter going topless, just like the three-year-old boys splashing around the pool. Oh, don't go there, babe. Don't go there. Topless toddlers apparently can spark lust in adults who are sexually attracted to children. That's what Sorrell said the park security guards repeatedly told her during the standoff. If there are pedophiles in your park, please harass them and leave my daughter and me alone, she said she told the guards. She held her ground. The guards threatened to call Detroit police. Finally, they did. Sorrell said, park manager Lorenzo Douglas apologized, although he declined comment to reporters. A Pittsburgh mother says she was asked to stop breastfeeding her baby at McDonald's. Julie Kovacs said she was nursing her six-month-old at a McDonald's when an employee asked her to stop. The worker reportedly said other customers complained. I was humiliated. I have four children. I've nursed them all. And this was the first time I've ever had anything like this to deal with, Kovacs said. She's now seeking legal advice about the incident. McDonald's management called Kovacs this week and apologized. No apology for the food. A man who caused a mid-flight ruckus after getting caught sharing his ice cream with his fiancée got an apology. This is Australia. Qantas business class passenger Jeffrey Stephen Pigeon has been ordered to pay $500 to charity and say sorry to a steward after an air rage incident in January. The Port Melbourne man faced court yesterday on a charge of common assault on an aircraft. His fiancée was seated four rows behind him in economy. A steward saw him sneaking his wine into economy from business, and when the steward served ice cream, he warned Pigeon not to take it into economy. But he was caught spoon-feeding his fiancée ice cream in business class. He told her to go back to her seat during meal service, as it was against airline policy for economy passengers to eat or drink food from other classes. Pigeon then pushed the steward into the galley door, threatening to smash him through it for speaking rudely through his fiancée. He later tried to apologize for his behavior. He'd booked two business class seats. Only one had been available. He's now in a diversion program. A married vicar who was romantically linked to the girlfriend of the late rock star John Entwistle has resigned and apologized to his parishioners for going off the rails. Reverend Colin Wilson, who officiated at the Who bassist's funeral last summer, went on sick leave in December after his involvement with Lisa Pritchett Johnson. He's told parishioners he'd been under pressure from diocesan leaders to resign as they'd made it clear to him that he'd brought the gospel into disrepute. Miss Pritchett Johnson admitted her affection for Wilson after John Entwistle died, describing him as a rock and roll vicar, but she denied they were anything more than soulmates. In this month's Parish Magazine, Wilson wrote, "This newsletter gives me the opportunity to say how sorry I am for going off the rails earlier this year and letting so many people down." That's a simile you won't hear in the United States, going off the rails, because we have no rails. Nicholas Coleridge, the managing director of Vogue publisher Condé Nast Publications, has apologized to the publisher of Elle magazine and agreed to pay libel damages over his false claim that Saddam Hussein profited from a financial stake in the rival fashion magazine. Elle's publisher, Hachette Filippacci, sued Coleridge in May over the allegations which he made in a London newspaper. In an out-of-court settlement, Coleridge has agreed to pay about $20,000 in libel damages, which Hachette Filippacci has agreed to donate to an Iraqi children's charity. "We welcome the written apology from Coleridge and his assurance that he will not repeat the libel that Saddam Hussein profited from a financial stake in Elle," said the statement. How could he profit from fashion? Look at him. A proclamation declaring a day for G. Gordon Liddy, the infamous Watergate conspirator, was issued in error. The South Dakota State Democratic Party chairwoman Judith Olson asked Governor Mike Rounds to apologize for the proclamation, saying it was in poor taste. Rounds issued the proclamation to mark Liddy's visit to the Black Hills for the annual Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. "We've literally issued hundreds of ceremonial proclamations since I took office in January," says Rounds. Governor Rounds, "This particular request was sent in by a South Dakota citizen, and because of the short turnaround time required, I did not have an opportunity to review the proposed proclamation." The governor says he usually signs every document himself that leaves the office, but that didn't happen in this case, he says, and we're reviewing our process. This accompanies more and more apologies, doesn't it? Reviewing the process. I'm going to take this personally since I played G. Gordon Liddy in a movie. "Don't apologize for me. Don't apologize for me. Just put my hand over a candle flame." And not an apology, but a habit. Democratic presidential candidate Howard Dean says this week he misspoke when he told the AFL-CIO he never favored raising the retirement age for Social Security benefits to age 70. He acknowledged he'd called for just such an increase when the country was faced with a deficit in 1995, but he said he no longer thinks it's necessary. Dean has made misstatements before on the presidential campaign trail. He apologized to rival John Edwards in March after saying that Edwards avoided talking about his support of the Iraq War before a largely anti-war audience in California. Dean said he did not hear Edwards when he pledged support for disarming Iraq by force and was booed and jeered by many in the crowd. In June, he angered Bob Graham's presidential campaign by saying the Florida senator was not one of the top-tier candidates. The next day, he said he regretted the remark. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a copyrighted feature. It's getting bigger and hopefully better. The Apologies of the Week.
I used to know you when we were young. You were in all my dreams. We sat together in period one, Fridays at 8:15. Now I see your face in the strangest places, movies and magazines. I saw you talking to Christopher Walken on my TV screen. But I will wait for you as long as I need to. And if you ever get back to Hackensack, I'll be here for you. I used to work in a record store. Now I work for my dad, scraping the paint off of hardwood floors. The hours are pretty bad. Sometimes I wonder where you are. Probably in LA. That seems to be where everybody else ends up these days. But I will wait for you as long as I need to. And if you ever get back to Hackensack, I'll be here for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Le Show. At last count, more than 100 people have qualified for the California ballot running to replace Gray Davis as the governor if he is recalled at the recall election in early October. The Supreme Court of California early this week rejected all of his challenges to the... I'm going to be Canadian for a moment here. To the process. And, of course, the big surprise... Arnold Schwarzenegger defied all the predictions and apparently, according to the reports, even his assurances to his close friend Richard Reardon, the former mayor of Los Angeles, that he wouldn't run, and announced on the Jay Leno show this week that he would, in fact, be running to replace Gray Davis. A lot of other people are, too, including Arianna Huffington and the California Lieutenant Governor Cruz Bustamante. A lot of people have weighed in with opinions on this subject, but of course there is no liberal talk radio yet to offer that view, or is there?
Now, talk radio with a brain and a heart and a brain.
Al Gore!
Welcome to the Gore Room.
Well, thank you very much. Our number one. And Al Franken, big show today.
Yeah, no kidding. Bigger than Rush Limbaugh's sauna pants.
Now. The only ad we don't welcome on this show is ad hominem. Especially one that sounds like leftover Pat McCormick material. Don't make me put you in the lockbox.
Oh, no. Okay.
Having a good time already. We've still got almost 3 hours.
Hey, you haven't talked about your speech.
Well, that's true. Yeah. We were so busy yesterday spending the whole show with Nancy Pelosi. And what a sharp cookie she is.
Yeah, tough cookie.
Yeah, but a sweet cookie underneath it all.
Hey, enough about cookies. You're making me hungrier than Rush Limbaugh's pancreas.
Okay. Point very well taken. We'll put that one in the point well taken file.
A little empty in there.
Yep. Anyway, yes, we delivered a speech to MoveOn.org this week.
Yeah, got some nice coverage.
Whatever wasn't spent on Arnold.
And Kobe.
Yeah, poor kid. Whatever was left, we got a good slice of it.
Good speech.
Well, thanks, Al. Huh. Sincere moment?
Sincere moment.
Just want to be able to recognize that next time one comes along. Yeah, I thought it was important to speak out strongly and fearlessly about the war in Iraq and what it tells us about this administration.
Uh-oh, he's starting to give the speech right here.
No, I'm not. But, you know, 8 months after I first stood up and made myself heard on this topic, I thought it was important to come back to it.
Well, yeah, so people wouldn't think it was just a one-time thing.
Mm-hmm. Like I didn't really care.
Right, which you do.
Well, I like to think I do.
And if you waited any longer to give it, people would have just thought you really were jumping on the Dean bandwagon.
Well, that's right, but you see, the first speech was about the war. Uh-huh. This speech was about what the war teaches us about Mr. Bush. So it's a journey.
Yeah. Well, you've gone from the specific to the big fat lion general and his boss.
And his boss. Right on the nose, Albert. Yeah. Hey, talking about Arnold in California, you know who we got to put in the lockbox?
Yeah, I think I know. Yeah. But who? Jay Leno for being such a kiss-ass?
No, I got to go on Jay Leno this fall. Let him kiss my ass.
Okay, you got it.
No, my candidate for the lockbox this hour is Congressman Daryl Issa.
Wow. That's a California roll.
I guess so. Anyway, you know the congressman.
I don't know him personally. Well, I didn't entertain at his son's bris, if that's what you mean.
He's the guy. Yeah, he's the guy who bankrolled the recall petition out of his own personal fortune in the car alarm business.
Yeah, law and order kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. But he cried Thursday at his press conference, pulling out of the election for governor.
He cried. He did a muskie.
He did a muskie. And he announced he's going to spend all his time from now on the quest for Middle East peace.
Uh-huh. All his time.
All his time.
What about his money?
Hey, good question.
But you don't need to put him in the lockbox. He's already stepped away from the car.
Nonetheless, Daryl Issa, we're putting you in the lockbox. That's still good fun. Before this segment runs away from us, we've got a great, good liberal on the phone with us this hour, a man who was part of the liberal movement way back when it was popular, and he's still fighting the good fight, and if I know him, he's pumping up for the contest right now. Governor Gray Davis in Sacramento, welcome to the Gore Room.
Well, Mr. Vice President, it's good to talk to you. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, Mr. Governor, quite a week.
Yeah.
Didn't do well in the state Supreme Court. You going to go to the federal Supremes to contest the recall set up?
Well, we're thinking about that right now. Oh. Although, Al, as you know better than anyone, except Bill Clinton, they're not all that receptive to logic and reason when it comes out of a Democratic mouth.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're 9 big fat liars and rogues.
That's Al Franken here with us.
Great. Mr. Vice President, I just wanted to say that this is a time when the liberal movement is under attack, and we really do have to stick together.
Or we're all going to stick separately.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how that goes. But, yes, Mr. Governor, you've really taken the lead in so many ways that show you care about people. Big increase in funding for prison guards.
Well, Mr. Vice President, I believe in dealing with the root causes of problems. The very best way to fight crime is to deal with the root causes of prison guard dissatisfaction. I think where our law enforcement priorities are concerned, my friend with the big physique might more accurately be called the exterminator.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
Al, is that some of your work?
No, sir. I think that's Bruce Valanche.
Well, I don't care if Governor Davis himself wrote it. It's a good line.
My line was that if all these accusations of womanizing are true about Arnold, maybe he should be called a sperminator.
No, see? Over the line. Well, we're putting you in the lockbox.
Uh-oh.
Governor Davis, you solved a very tough budget crisis and again did so in a way that proved you care.
Well, thank you, Mr. Vice President. We fought very hard to make certain that every single teacher who has the misfortune to be laid off under this budget does remain eligible for the state employees picnic.
Well, you know, nothing's more important to the future of our young people than the morale of our laid-off teachers. Hey, Governor Davis, can you stick around?
Oh, you bet. I'm not getting many interview requests right about now.
I know, the liberal media. We'll let Al Franken out of the lockbox next segment, and we'll be back with the embattled California governor. And you just got to ask yourself, if this man's not a great liberal, why are the conservatives working so hard to get rid of him? Stick around.
You're listening to the Fairness in Media Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, won't you let me read the trades for you? No answer really required there. This is from Ad News, Australia's top-selling advertising, marketing, and media magazine. Reading the trades from down under, ladies and gentlemen. Talk about a full-service radio show. I'll read it for you. Digital doubts as ABC opts to kill channels. ABC means the Australian Broadcasting Commission. Dateline Canberra. The federal government's push to promote digital television received a significant blow when the ABC, the government-owned network, pulled the plug on a multi-channel service, including Fly TV and ABC Kids. The ABC had been one of the most proactive suppliers of digital services because it hoped to attract additional government funds for supporting. Digital adoption. Quote, given the paucity of incentives for the public to take up digital television, the ABC initially considered that a dedicated children's and youth television service could attract funding support from the government. Unfortunately, this has not been the case, says ABC Managing Director Russell Balding. Russell, you don't have to get a toop or anything, but change the name, babe. Russell Balding. That's like the new head of Liberia, Moses Blah. Moses. The decision to close Fly TV and ABC Kids followed the government's refusal to allocate $250 million in additional funding to the ABC over the next 3 years. If the funding had been forthcoming, it would have been very exciting, said Tim O'Keefe, managing consultant of Digital Broadcasting Australia. Just 75,000 set-top boxes and integrated TVs, representing just 1% of Australian homes, have been sold since the networks began broadcasting standard definition digital in early 2001. Now that the ABC has canned its digital channels, it's possible that fewer consumers will be willing to make the investment in digital TV. If we're going to get the mums and dads, we'll need those extra services the ABC was talking about, says O'Keefe. That's what we'll need, ladies and gentlemen. And from Advertising Age here in this country, Jay Leno slated for Queer Eye Makeover. Dateline Los Angeles, major marketers are ogling product placement deals on the breakout hit Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, as NBC plots an August 14th special in which the show's gay fashion team will make over Jay Leno. Audience numbers for the July 29th Queer Eye, in its fourth airing on Bravo, shot up 62% from the prior week. This is the breakout show of the summer on any network, cable, or broadcast, says NBC Entertainment President Jeff Zucker. It's out of control right now. The Queer Eye premise: one straight man agrees to have his lifestyle, hair, clothing, and accessories made over by five gay men. All are experts in different areas: grooming, food and wine, fashion, culture, and interior design. On July 24th, Bravo parent NBC aired a Queer Eye special that compressed the show into a 30-minute long program. Zucker said NBC plans one more Queer Eye special that will feature the boys from the show making over Jay Leno, according to Ad Age. The makeover monster hit was originally launched with small product placement deals: Diesel jeans, Redken hair products, Wilson leather, along with small salons and restaurants that don't normally advertise on TV. Now, says Vivi Ziegler, senior vice president of marketing and advertising for the series, more mainstream consumer marketing companies are looking for tie-ins. Yes, I have clients that want to get in on the show, says Rich Yaffe, president of Leverage Group. You have experts on the show who are recommending products. These experts are anointing brands, he said. But he added, how this will drive sales is another question. Ms. Ziegler said retailers are interested in having a Queer Eye presence in their stores, although she wouldn't disclose specific names. We're sifting through those inquiries. The show lends itself to product placement, says David Collins, a Queer Eye executive producer. We're showing, for example, the process of how to shave as opposed to what blade to use. And that is a way of creatively having balance in the show so that you don't become one big infomercial. Collins says he's nearing a marketing deal with an alcoholic beverage. What, are they going to show you how to drink? Already, Queer Eye has had product placement for Disaronno Originale Amaretto, Procter & Gamble's Crest White Strips already has an early start with product placement in the show. White Strips has targeted gay men in magazine ads and considers them part of the brand's core consumer base. But it sees Queer Eye as a way to reach women. Scout Productions, Queer Eye's production company, is eyeing marketing partners but said it won't blink when it comes to content. The hook of the show is the story, says Collins. We never want that interfered with because of product placement. Not everyone, however, is sold on Queer Eye. Mitch Canner, a partner with Integrated Entertainment in Beverly Hills, says the show is, quote, too obvious an environment for product placement. Not all programming lends itself to integration. A proud voice for segregation makes itself heard when I read the trades for you, a copyrighted feature.
A memo for the file met with attorneys on the South Beach permit matter. City indicates they will allow Kings of Queens to operate as an openly gay nightclub as long as...
Yale, can I come in? And the answer is yes.
OJ, I wasn't expecting... That is to say, how did you...
I just did some old school wrestling with Sherry, and she let me right on in. Give me some.
You mean the handshake's even longer now?
Always.
Well, sit down, Juice. My God, I haven't seen you since the last 911 call.
Mm-hmm. Good times. How you been?
Oh, you know, defending the innocent.
Mm-hmm.
So, should I start the meter running, or is this purely a social call?
Hey, if this was just a social call, I'd be busting in on my girlfriend. Yeah, this could be a serious commission deal for you.
Okay. Meeting with Mr. Simpson on Unknown Matter begins at 10:53 a.m.
Shoot.
I mean...
Listen, man. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest news story of the year?
I don't know. Iraq, fighting the planning commission over the Kings of Queens.
Kobe. The Kobe thing. It's like the trial of a century of another century.
Yeah, actually, you're right. Mm-hmm. One of the guys from my firm is a weekend analyst on Court TV. He says this thing is super hot.
Well, you notice who isn't any kind of analyst on any channel?
Cochran, but he's probably going to come in on the appeal. Greta, she's got her own show now. Roger Casa, Jesus, whatever happened to him?
You're looking at him.
Meeting with Mr. Simpson on Unknown Matter ends at 10:54 a.m.
Yeah, what are you doing?
OJ, there's no way.
Hey, man, I've been hearing that crap all my life. There's no way you can make it out of Oakland. There's no way a black man can start for USC. There's no way a football player can co-star with Leslie Nielsen. Mm-hmm. There's no way you can lose your wife and come back on TV. Well, you know what I've learned, Yale? Hmm? Where there's juice, there's a way.
Look, far be it from me to discourage the American dream. What would you like from me? I'm not an agent.
Oh, I know that. You know, I can't get an agent. Fred Goldman could get a hold of the commission money. Mm. Look, you're a friend of Larry King's.
Well, we go back.
Just give him a call and let me talk to him. He won't take my calls, and even if he would, I just think it makes for a better pitch if I'm here sitting in your office with you and not calling from the Escalade on the way to Christie's house, to, you know, pumped out of my skull.
Okay, I've got an 11:15.
Hey, you know how quick I can be when I want to be.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. This is his... Larry, Yale.
Hey, man. You got the last payment on the old deal, right? We're all square?
Yes, sir, of course. A friend of mine's in the office.
Larry, it's Juice. How you doing, man?
OJ, I'm good. Yeah. I think I can honestly say for the first time in my life that I'm going to need a new bypass before I need a new wife.
I hear that. Listen, man, you're doing great shows on the Kobe thing.
Thanks. I think we got the best panel in the
business. But you know who you need? You need me, Larry. Yeah. Who knows more about a big celebrity trial featuring a great black athlete and a hot white woman? Although, to be honest with you, if I hadn't gotten to those tits, Nicole wouldn't have been nearly as hot. But, I mean, really.
Well, we've already got Bobby Shapiro.
Oh, hey, Larry. Bobby Shapp didn't do squat in my case. He just hung around so he'd have deniability at the synagogue. You want the main man? I'll give you insight like you wouldn't believe.
Juice, you know, all our booking is done out of San Diego. I can't...
Larry, where are you? Can you hear me?
I'm at Nathan Al's, best deli in the world.
Oh, well, come on, man. You know people would watch.
Oh, no question. This would be a car wreck on top of a train wreck. Uh-huh. No way that's not great TV. But, mm-hmm. Juice, let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
Would you go to the trial?
Don't think I can, Larry. Fred Goldman could get to my per diem. But I can cover it from here, you know, with the satellite deal and the internet and everything. Yeah. I mean, Christie's got the premium tier on her dish. You know, I could go bust down her door if there was anything I really needed to see.
Yeah. Dude, what about that reality show thing? That happening?
Something about it's too real or something.
You know. Yale, you still there?
Yeah, it's my office, Larry.
What do you think?
Well, I wouldn't advise Mr. Simpson to leave the state of Florida. What he does besides that is it's up to him.
Yeah.
Hey, Larry, I read Drudge sometimes. He says your numbers are going down. Is that on the level?
Listen, this O'Reilly bummy is just like every Irish drunk I ever met in Brooklyn.
Hey, listen to this. The juice covers the beef.
Who's the beef?
Oh, that's my nickname for Kobe, see? Kobe Beef.
Yeah, Kobe Beef.
That's for free, Larry. Just off the top.
Listen, Juice, I got some people here that really don't like to be kept waiting. I'll have Wendy get back to you on this.
Don't shine me, Larry.
I'm not. Talk to you soon, Yale.
Yeah.
So, what do you think?
I think he's having breakfast with his old Brooklyn pals, and he'll get back to you.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Thanks, Yale.
Anytime, Juice. Just call next time.
Yeah, right.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, stay your emailing finger. It's not the Defense Intelligence Agency that certified those trailers are for use in making hydrogen for balloons. It's just the technical experts at the Defense Intelligence Agency, just the guys who know what they're talking about. The agency itself hasn't signed off on it yet because, you know, there may be other factors. Here's the factor I'm concerned about. That concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the East Coast on WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave, across North America on Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 140, and around the world via the Internet on your computer whenever you want it at two locations, KCRW.com and HarryShearer.com. And it would be just like the other experts signing on with the technical experts, you know. If you would agree to join me, then would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show playlists are always available. Correction, almost always available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.